and welcome back to the Counseling Corner. I am so excited about today's episode. I actually think we have not talked a lot about today's topic on the show, so I'm very excited to get started. I have a lot of questions. I don't know as much about this topic. So before we tell you what we are getting into, I'm here today with my co-host, Emmy.
Hey.
And we're here with Kristen. So Kristen, for everybody in listener land that listens to our podcast that does not know you, hasn't heard you on the podcast before, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, everybody. I am Kristen Overholt. I've been here for a little over 2 years now. I came from Oliver Pyatt Centers, which is a residential treatment facility focusing on eating disorders. I was there for about 7 years. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, grew up in Miami my whole life, and right now I'm just working with all types of individuals, but obviously specializing in mental health, eating disorders, low self-esteem, self-harm, everything along those lines.
Okay, amazing. Some really tough topics there that you have to deal with on a constant basis. So, I mean, she kind of gave it away in her intro, but we're going to be talking about eating disorders today, specifically for our segment on debunking myths on that you see on social media. And I think eating disorders is something that is a very active topic on social media right now. You see it constantly. You see terminology. Even me, who's not super, super well versed on eating disorders, I obviously studied it and I've worked with it as a secondary thing, but you know, I don't have nearly as much information as I'm sure you have. So I am very excited to learn. And I have a lot of questions, right? You know, we're seeing a lot of proper terminology used in the wrong way on social media from what I've learned, even with like the most basic definition of them. Right. And I know that there are a ton of pages on Instagram, on Reddit, on Facebook of, you know, women and men putting up photos of themselves and almost like kind of encouraging
putting it on a pedestal.
Exactly. So have you seen this? What's your take on it? Kind of give me some insight.
Right. I mean, like I said, it somewhat puts it on a pedestal. They kind of glamorize this thing of thin bodies, and they funnel it into only really focusing on starvation and thin bodies, where obviously disorders, there's no one way or the other. Everyone's eating disorder is very different. And sure, some of it can be the desire to be thin, but it's so much more than just that. And but they put this as like this glamorization of it, when in reality, it's usually a lot deeper than that. It usually comes from a lot of trauma, a lot of low self-esteem, a lot of self-harm, a lot of self-hatred. It's not just this desire to look like this famous person or the desire to be thin and have the perfect body. It's just so much deeper than that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, people online can be really, really harsh when you post photos. You know, weight is something that's commented on a lot. It's like these keyboard warriors, you can't see their faces, their little photo is an angel, and they're promoting love, and then they're being very hateful within the comments. And you know, what I think people don't realize is that it doesn't always look like somebody skinny who has an eating disorder, right? So of the myths you've seen, like, for example, I've seen a lot of information online about body dysmorphia.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
And I think it is very generalized. Like people are saying basically like, I don't like my stomach, I have body dysmorphia.
Exactly. Right.
And so just for everybody out there in listener land to understand what body dysmorphia really is and what it means to have body dysmorphia, to be diagnosed with that, compared to what we're seeing online, which is a very, very mild,
very vague
dislike. Yeah, right. So what is body dysmorphia?
Right. And like you said, people are saying, oh, I don't like this part of my body. I don't like this part. I have body dysmorphia. It goes so much deeper than that. you literally see something that is not there when you have body dysmorphia. You see right. something, and it's very real to the person that is looking at themselves in the mirror, that sees something that is generally not there. And of course, everyone can pick little pieces of themselves that, oh, I wish my nose was shaped this way. But it's just, body dysmorphia is seeing yourself in such a negative light, but your brain telling yourself this is what you look like, when the person outside says that's completely wrong, but you see it yourself, so you can't believe what anyone else says. And it's a constant battle of just self-hatred when you look at yourself in the mirror and completely seeing something different. It's not just poor body image. It's yeah. just so much more than that.
Yeah. And, you know, I see it online very hyper-focused on the weight situation. Right. Where it's like somebody very, very thin will see themselves as very, very overweight. Right. But you mentioned something, which I'm so glad you brought up, that, for example, it's like a nose. Like if somebody with a petite, very straight nose were to tell you, I have a giant bump on the top of my nose. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like to that extreme where it's like there's literally nothing there.
Visibly no bump, but this person can see a large bump.
Yeah. Right. And how else would you see body dysmorphia?
As in like what other parts, like,
right. Like give me another example of what body dysmorphia looks like. I just want to get more realistic examples out there because it's right. used so loosely right now, you know, like
right. of course.
My friends tell me I'm skinny, but I feel fat. I must have body dysmorphia, which right. is not what it is at all.
Right. Exactly. Or, my stomach is not flat like that person's stomach. My breasts are not the same size. And obviously it's not just females, it's men.
Yeah.
Calf muscles. My calf muscles are non-existent. This person calf muscles. Like, it's just every little thing, but it's so extreme that it's, they've made it up in their mind. The thigh gap. My thighs are touching, when in reality you see a huge thigh gap, but yeah. that person is saying, no, my thighs rub together when I walk, which is a very normal thing to happen. But someone that looks at themselves and can't see that, but everyone else can see it. Like, it's just that extreme yeah. of differences.
Yeah. Also, somebody that is truly suffering from body dysmorphia doesn't say that they have body dysmorphia, right? Because correct. They
not
don't.
Not unlikely.
Typically, right, because they typically, don't believe that.
Because they don't believe, right. they don't believe. They don't so believe, if somebody right. says, oh, I must have body dysmorphia because of this, but if you right. really have body dysmorphia, you don't believe that you have body dysmorphia, so you can't say right. that you have body dysmorphia.
Right. Unless you're in treatment.
Right, yes.
Unless you're in treatment.
Going through the process and going through the steps, which is
exactly
realization. But it is, in a way, to go through that process, you're telling your mind something that it's been telling you for so long to twist that. And so that yeah. recovery is very hard. And it's such a long process because you are rewiring your brain in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
yeah. Telling yourself something yeah. else.
Yeah. And so something else that I see a lot on social media that I know Emmy and I have talked about a lot before is diet culture.
Mm-hmm.
Fad diets and, you know, people who are not nutritionists, don't have any background or training, are not even coaches, are giving very specific nutritional information about how to lose weight and the best way to be eating and giving right. all these facts. And it's just influencers talking about this stuff. Right. How do you see that affecting the eating disorder community?
I mean, it's such a slippery slope. And this fasting thing that's all popular, also the fast for 24 hours or fat. I mean, it starts as a little, or it can. Obviously, like I said, eating disorders, everyone's story is a different story. Everyone's experience is different. But when you focus so much on restricting and saying, okay, I can't eat carbs, I can't eat this, that's just such a slippery slope, because then it becomes an obsession and it becomes a way of life. And it, okay, start with no carbs, and now I'm gonna eat no refined sugars, now I'm gonna, and it just goes down and down. But is that really realistic? Is that sustainable? is that healthy? And most of these diets are not healthy. My process is be mindful. If you want a cookie, eat a cookie. Don't eat six cookies, eat a cookie. If you want carbs, eat carbs. Don't eat it three times a day for 7 days for every day, but ask yourself, what am I craving right now? What does my body want? And eat until your body says, okay, I'm satisfied. But when you go and start restricting and saying, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, your body will crave that. So then once you allow yourself to have that, that's when binge eating comes in. And it's just a twist of all different habits and behaviors that go into each one. And I mean, yeah, if you don't have a healthy relationship with food or with your body, then it's a very slippery slope.
Yeah.
Plus you're only addressing the physical. You're not addressing the thoughts and the mindset around it. So, you know, you can go from diet to diet or, you know, restrict here, restrict there, but you still have the same brain, right? I always say you still have the same brain unless you've been working around your brain and have been, you know, learning about, you know, thought work and mindset. But if not, whatever you do, wherever you go, you're still carrying your same brain without work around it. And it's something interesting. I'm a certified life and health coach, but even though I'm a certified health coach, and the way that I use my health coaching is part of my life coaching, where I tap in when I have a client, I tap into other areas of their life, like their career. And then if I see that it's feeding into the health part, then I go there. But I don't work with clients that have eating disorders, and I'm a certified health coach.
Right.
So that's a very important point that I want, you know, something that I wanted to point out, that even though you may be a nutritionist dietitian, right? Mm-hmm. But as a certified health coach, I don't work with clients that have had eating disorders. I'll work with them around life coaching, but they'll have their own nutritionist or dietitian or therapist for the eating disorder portion of it. So I think that I just wanted to share that because it's a very important point. You know, that it's not the same, the way that I work with my, although it's very similar because of course I'm in a mental health practice. So I don't do diets. It's all around eating until satisfaction. Eat your normal diet, up to satisfaction without overeating. And if you're overeating, why are you overeating? And we examine that, right?
Right.
So it's very similar to the eating disorder population, although I don't work with that. It's very similar to the eating disorder population, the way that I work around it.
Yeah. As far as how you present, you know, because I've talked to you, Emmy, a lot about that, and you present it in the same way where you incorporate a lot of mindful eating, like make sure you're taking time apart, you're sitting down, you're by yourself, you're enjoying your meal, you're checking with your body, all those things that you incorporate, correct, I know are similar as far. And Kristen, just for everybody out there in listener land who may know a little bit less than we do about this, what is mindful eating, right? How do you learn these things?
Right. And that's, like I said, the main thing is the mindfulness. And it's sitting with yourself before you have a snack or a meal and asking yourself, okay, what, I go by a number scale. What hunger am I right now? 0 is I am starving. I feel like I'm about to pass out. 10 is I'm so full, I feel sick. And we say we want to be like a 3 or 4, and 5 is like numbness. I don't know. And a lot of people who are coming from an eating disorder, they don't know their cues. They've messed with their cues so much to the point where they're like, I don't know what I feel. But it's about sitting with yourself and asking yourself, okay, do I feel rumbles in my stomach? Do I feel emptiness? How hungry am I? Then sitting down and each bite, like not watching TV, not being distracted, but tasting the flavors, putting the fork down in between, really being present with the food itself. And when you start feeling full, say, okay, am I full? Am I satiated? Maybe I'm missing a flavor that I need, like a sweetness to make me feel the satiation. Am I overeating? Like, it's just really asking yourself so many questions, and it sounds tedious at first because it's like, okay, I'm just going to eat lunch, but you really have to be in that mindset of what am I doing right now? What am I tasting right now? What am I enjoying? Am I feeling like I'm treating my body the right way? And then when you're done, how full are you? We say we want to be like an 8. A 10 is, okay, I ate too much. Let's sit with that. And you have to normalize that too. Sometimes when I go out with my girlfriends or my husband for dinner, I'm going to end at a 10. And that's okay because I'm enjoying myself. I went out to a restaurant, but am I ending at a 10 every meal? Then let's process that. You want to end at, okay, I feel full and I feel satiated, which is also a different thing. So it's really being present with everything you're doing in that moment.
Right. Right. Kristen, and it's so important to look into that.
Mm-hmm. What are,
but also, oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. What are signs, that someone may have an eating disorder? Let's say somebody has, I guess, does a person recognize that they have an eating disorder, or does somebody else recognize that of that person? Is a person cognizant that they may have an eating disorder, or do they go to a treatment center because somebody puts them there?
Right.
Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes. Yeah. And of course, nothing is black or white. But a lot of people are familiar that they have disordered eating. Mm-hmm. Like they're like, okay, constantly I'm thinking about food. I'm thinking about numbers. I'm thinking about my weight. I'm thinking about what can I eat? What am I going to eat at this restaurant? So a lot of people that suffer with an eating disorder are aware that they are struggling. They are aware that they have some sort of disordered eating. The biggest thing is, do they want to get help? And also a big thing about like social media, what we were talking about, is people think of eating disorders as just a diet or watching what they're eating or counting calories. It's really a big thing of control. A lot of people, it has nothing to do with the food. It has more to do with having control over something in their life. I have control over what I'm putting in my body. I have control over what this is going to do. I know exactly how many calories it is. I know exactly what it is made of. So I have that control. So a lot of it is not to do with diet food. It's about control, because they have, majority of people that suffer an eating disorder, not just have poor body image, but suffer through an eating disorder, they have traumas in their lives. I mean, and a lot of people say, oh, they just want to be skinny. I've had so many clients, male and female, they say, no, it's not the skinny thing. I don't want to have curves. I don't want to be attractive to this other person, which a lot of these individuals have sexual trauma. So they said, I don't want to be attractive. So a female will say, I don't want to have boobs. I don't want to have curves, because mm-hmm. I know that that will attract the other person. And so it just goes so much more than just, oh, I want to be on a diet.
Yeah.
Yeah. How interesting. Yeah.
And that's actually a great point that is not brought up a lot on mm-hmm. social media. You don't see any of that on social media. Right. They mainly make it about the weight and the way that you look.
Yeah. And so many people that suffer from an eating disorder, you would have no idea. Yeah. I mean, of course, there is that generalized body image look that looks very malnourished and thin, but someone can look very healthy from the outside and have suffered 20 plus years with an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. So you really have no idea, but social media makes it, oh, you're not sick enough if you can't see their ribs, or you're not sick enough if they're not this body image.
Yeah. And another thing that I have a question about is anorexia, right? What you see a lot on social media about anorexia is just, you know, the eating portion of it, mm-hmm. where, you know, you're not eating, basically. That's all the information you have online. You're restricting your eating to an extreme.
Correct.
Right? But from my understanding, there's more to that.
Yes, of course. So there's so much to that, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the reality of anorexia?
Right, and that's also with the control, with the calorie counting. I have to be at a deficit. The weighing themselves multiple times a day. If it doesn't go down to this number, then I'm not doing it right. I'm failing. I can't even get an eating disorder correct, which that a lot of people are like, if I can't get to this weight, if I can't restrict to this amount, then I can't even do that right. So it's that self-hatred. But anorexia nervosa, it is, I mean, that obviously is the restrictive part. And it's telling yourself, I'm not going to eat more than 600 calories a day. It's also a lot of overexercising when the anorexia is in play. Okay, I ate 100 calories. I have to exercise for 300 calories. So it's that mind work, though, of the control of knowing exactly what you can do in those moments and what you're allowed to eat.
So exercising almost obsessively, correct, to burn a correct amount of calories is also falls under anorexia.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's a big fact that isn't spoken about often. And it's a tough pill to swallow, I think, for a lot of people, because, you know, I, for one, recommend exercise to every single person who walks in here solely for their mood.
Of course.
Right. I don't know if you guys have seen. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen Stutz on Netflix.
No,
no.
Jonah Hill did a documentary with his therapist, and the therapist's last name is Stutz, and the documentary is called Stutz, and he talks about all the things, and he was like, it's like an 80% shift in your mood when you work out.
Right.
When you start like moving your body, right?
Right.
And especially if you're starting at doing nothing and starting to incorporate movement, you'll see a shift in your mood immediately. And so I think and a lot of other people have such a tough time with that, because finding some middle ground there is important. Like, how can exercise be bad for you? But I think they're not picturing it in the way that you just described now, where it's like obsessively having to lose an amount of calories in order to stay in this crazy deficit, where if you eat a cookie, you feel like you have to run 3 miles.
Right, exactly. And it's everything in life is about a balance, even healthy things. If you overdo it, it's not healthy. Like, and I encourage all my clients to exercise, but when it becomes a job, when say your body is just not feeling right, you're coming down with a cold and you don't exercise, how do you feel? Are you okay with that? Or are you beating yourself up because you ate this and you're not able to exercise? So it's like, what's behind the exercise? I mean, at the residential facility, we had exercise classes, but say a client didn't eat the meal that they were supposed to eat, then they cannot do movement. But if you're going through the process and you're doing it, we're gonna incorporate movement because it is important to have that. But when it becomes an obsession, when your anxiety goes from a 0 to 100 because you could not exercise for one day, then there comes a problem. And when you're only exercising to lose a certain amount of calories and not doing it for yourself to feel better, then that's where the problem comes.
Right. Right.
And an eating disorder is a mental health, right? Issue, right? So somebody that is exercising doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's not connecting the two. One is somebody may have a mental health issue that's an eating disorder, and somebody else may not, and they're simply exercising because, correct, they want to exercise, be stronger, whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah, with my clients, I do the same thing, and I call it, interestingly enough, I think, again, it's because I'm here working with other therapists, but I don't call it exercise. I call it movement, and we talk about it, and it's not about moving to lose weight. But again, I do what Gabby does. It's moving so that you feel better, right? Like you know, the dopamine hit and all of that. It's more of getting out there rather than I don't connect that if you exercise, you lose weight. It's like two separate things. Right. If you eat to satisfaction, you'll lose the weight, but if you know, exercise, it's different. It's to move. And so we separate the two so that one is not, they're both mutually exclusive one from the other.
Right. And the main focus is being healthy, feeling healthy. Right. I told my clients, I was like, I haven't had a scale in my house for 20 years. I don't need to know the number. But I know how I feel and how I feel on a daily basis. Do I feel good every day? No, I'm human. I have bad body image days as well. But I go by being healthy. Whatever weight that is, whatever number that is, it doesn't matter as long as I feel healthy.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And, you know, what Emmy was saying, I think that's a struggle a lot of people have. And I think it's a big ask to any, you know, these are where the extremes are dangerous and where social media is dangerous and where even this podcast could be dangerous, right? Because we are still giving minimal information for the gravity of a lot of these issues. And so with the exercise thing, you know, like we're touching the very basics, but it's what Kristen was saying. It's an extreme where you are so obsessive about working out. You're so obsessive about the amount of calories you're losing and about making sure that you're incorporating enough exercise to meet the amount of calories that you need to lose in that day for the food you ate. Like it's that specific. Cause I know that lots of people get excited when they see that they, after a spinning class, you know, they burned this many calories. That doesn't mean you're anorexic.
Correct.
Right. And correct. I think that's the big difference in what we're talking about now and what we're seeing on social media, where it's like, are you calorie counting? Like some people calorie count. It's not obsessive and it doesn't mean you have an eating disorder.
Correct.
Are you not are you dieting in a way that's unhealthy? Maybe. Are you just learning what your body needs? Also, maybe. So it's these distinctions that when you say calorie counting on Instagram, like that's not enough to self-diagnose.
Correct. Not even close. Right. Mm-hmm. So it goes so much deeper than just a diet or just the desire to be thin or poor body image. That's all kind of can be included, but it's just so much more than that. And is it affecting your life? Some people that are diagnosed with an eating disorder, like the exercise thing, they will choose to go to the gym by themselves over spending time with their friends. And it's because they will beat themselves up if they don't get the gym in today. Like that's when it's like, okay, this is a problem. It's affecting your daily life for the negative. So that's when you have to look more into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they'll skip out on important things like a family member's birthday, they'll choose to get to work late. They'll choose to lose sleep all to make sure that they're getting in this time or that they're spending time like obsessively calculating how much they're going to take, you know, as far as food and calories go. Right.
And again, that leads back to the control.
Right.
A lot of it leads back to having control. So if you go out with friends and you don't know exactly what's going to happen, where you're going to eat or what you're going to do, you feel that sense of loss of control. And that just traumatizes and terrifies an individual suffering from an eating disorder because they need that control. That's the calorie counting. It's not always about making sure they're at a deficit. It's about having that control, knowing exactly what is going on, because at times if they have trauma or something went on, they felt like they didn't have control. So this is what we focus on. So a lot of it ties back into control as opposed to just body image.
Yeah. And so Kristen, I had one more question, I think, because we really see the most talked about ones. I see a lot of body dysmorphia, a lot of anorexia, and a lot of bulimia. And so I knew for sure today I kind of wanted to touch on those three, where, you know, if you could define bulimia for us and then maybe tell us the different ways in which it's most commonly seen.
Right. And bulimia, like, there is a lot of restricting that ties into bulimia. It's not just people think, oh, bulimia is overeating and purging, which that is a big part of it. If you're diagnosed anorexia nervosa, then you are not doing the purging aspect. But bulimia is the process of either overeating and restricting and then purging afterwards to feel that release of emotions, release of getting the food out.
And what is purging? Just for everybody out there to understand, because I know we use a lot of our technical terms and not everybody gets them.
Right. Purging is after you eat some sort of food, going to the bathroom and throwing up.
Are there so, other ways to forcing purge
yourself,
also?
Forcing yourself to throw up.
Forcing yourself to throw up. Correct. There's also exercise is a way of purging. So like we were talking about, I eat this much, I'm going to exercise this much to, in their minds, it's saying, I got that out of me. Bulimia. A lot of people think that, okay, I put 200 calories in me, I'm going to throw up and I'm going to lose whatever I ate, which in reality, that's not true. Unfortunately, you see a lot of people that were diagnosed with bulimia, all different body sizes. You would have no idea that they suffer with this. And it's usually such a secret and the shame that's tied to it. They will make sure that no one knows that they suffer from this because the shame that's tied to it. They don't want people to know, oh, I'm going to the bathroom now to physically stick my fingers in my throat and make myself throw up because I feel so uncomfortable with the feeling of food inside of my stomach. Again, it's that control. It's like, okay, I feel uncomfortable. I need to get this out of me. I know how to. So they make themselves throw up.
Yeah. What about people that take
laxatives?
Laxatives or like those teas that make you use the restroom or things that make you just like that, like almost like that claim that they clear out your body.
Yes. And that is a huge thing in individuals that suffer with eating disorders. They will take a certain amount of laxative. They take anything and that gets it out of their body as well. And it's that obsession, that control, getting a little vulgar, but and in the residential, we would have individuals that would have to flush everyone's toilet to make sure that they weren't lying about bowel movements or something along those lines, or obviously purging. So we had to hold them accountable. And some people would say, I haven't gone to the bathroom in 3 days, I need laxatives. When in reality, it's all recorded. And it's like, well, no, you have. But it's that urgency to feel like they have control of getting it out of their bodies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
wow, I didn't know that was done in the treatment centers. That's super interesting. And it makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, they have people aides that watch
recovery coaches. Yeah.
Yeah. Recovery coaches that they, I was thinking, trying to think of the word that's what they do. They make sure that, you know, the bathroom is one of the places that they watch when they go. So another thing that I wanted to add is to this conversation is binging, right? We haven't discussed binging, but binging is one of the, I think it was one of the last ones that was named as one of the, as part of a disordered eating, but it wasn't. And that was like, I don't know, I want to say like 9 years ago or something that it first started, that it first came into the disordered eating world. Because it wasn't considered
a restriction.
And so it wasn't considered disordered eating. And so now that is also now considered disordered eating, right, Kristen?
Of course, yes, yes. And you can have binge eating disorder without bulimia. I mean, and that is when you have a loss of control. Mm-hmm. Some people with or without an eating disorder will say, oh, I binge. I'm like, okay, well, what did you binge on? Oh, I had 5 Oreos. I'm like, well, I mean, was that a binge or did you just kind of overdo it a little bit? A binge is when you literally cannot control yourself in what you're doing right now, what you're putting in your body. You're making yourself physically ill by the amount of food you're putting in your body. You tell yourself, I need to stop, but you physically cannot. And it's that out of body experience that it gets to that level. It's not just overeating. Like some people will say, oh, I binged. There's a big difference between binge and an overeat.
Right. And that's a verb that's been used now. Yeah. That's a verb. Correct, that's turned into like a verb now. You know, overdoing it
when in reality, overeating is just, no, you kind of just overdid it. You knew what you were doing to an extent, but a binge is you don't have control and it takes over your mind in a way. And you binge to the point of being physically ill.
Yeah. Right.
And something that's done regularly, right? Not one day you ate a bunch of cookies. It's like a regular. Continuous. It's a continuous.
Yeah. It becomes thing. A habit. Right.
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 A way of life.
Right. Yeah. And it's usually hidden. Also, people usually don't know that either. Like, you will hide it because the shame that goes along that, because you know when you're done with it, you see what you've done and you're embarrassed and ashamed. So you make sure you do that in your home by yourself or in your bedroom. I mean, you make it a way that no one else sees you doing that.
Yeah.
Right. Now, with the binging, is it more, can you see it physically with the people that binge tend to be at a higher number on the scale, heavier than others, than like bulimic and
right. It, yes,
I don't know how to say it. Like
right. Yes, if that is the only disorder they have. I mean, a lot of the times it's not just clear cut bulimia, or clear cut binging, or clear cut anorexia. A lot of it goes hand in hand with each other. But yes, but there are individuals that are just diagnosed with binge eating disorder. And yes, they typically will be more overweight than someone that's just diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. Now, the bulimia, all different types of weight, you have no idea. Right. So, but again, a lot of people, unless they are clearly only diagnosed with binge eating disorder, then you might not know.
Right.
And so for the parents out there, Kristen, who have kids and maybe are listening to this and they're like, man, how do I know? How do I figure it out? What are some signs that parents or family members should look out for in order to maybe get their son or daughter some help? What are some signs that you see out there? You know, the kids that are athletes or dancers and...
Right. I mean, a lot of the things is seeing they start being more secretive. They say, oh, I'm not hungry, I'll eat later. If they don't want to sit down with the family, say it's typically family dinners, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I'm okay, I have a stomach ache, I'll eat this other time. If they start changing their habits, like athletes that work out at school after school, all of a sudden they're working out in the mornings also. Being like, okay, there was a change here. Moods, behaviors, eating disorder clients. I mean, there is a clear difference between someone and their eating disorder. You become very agitated. Headaches. I mean, think of restricting food. You're going to have headaches. You're going to have feeling not yourself. So noticing, okay, all of a sudden they're on edge. They're acting a lot different than they typically do. So just different things along those lines, wanting more control, all different kinds of things, saying, oh, I'm not going to eat carbs, just any change of their diet or any change of their mood or any change of the exercise scheme can kind of put some red flags there.
Okay.
And
or wearing bigger clothes, like some people, they want to cover themselves. So they end up wearing bigger clothes so they can't see their bodies. So just any kind of change in their personality.
Okay. I don't know, but how about if they self-harm? Mm-hmm. Is that a sign also of maybe having any, along with everything else you've mentioned, but can that also be a sign of disordered eating? Of an eating disorder?
It can. Again, self-harm is a big thing with control also. They feel a loss of control. Right. And so the control is, I'm going to hurt myself because I know it's going to feel this pain and it's going to give that release. So do they go hand in hand often? Yes. Does everyone that self-harms have an eating disorder? No. Does everyone that has an eating disorder self-harm? No. But it does tie into that self-harm. And I mean, to an extent, an eating disorder is a way of self-harm. You're restricting your body from the nourishment that it needs. So self-harm is not just physically cutting yourself or burning yourself or scratching yourself. It's also restricting your body from the nourishments that it needs. But again, it ties back into that control. And does one always say the other? No. So that's what's hard as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, Kristen, thank you so much for all the information. I know you answered a lot of my questions and a lot of doubts that I had and a lot of little tidbits that I remembered from, you know, what we were taught. But you see, you're bombarded with so much of this on social media that it's even me who has that knowledge is hard to remember, like, wait, but this is wrong, right? Because it's just so abundant on social media.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm super grateful that you came on and debunked some myths for us and gave us some more info. And, you know, before we close out, is there anything that you want to leave everyone in listener land with in regards to this? I know this is a series that we've been doing, but I think eating disorders is something we have not talked about nearly enough. So anything you want to leave them with before we're done today?
And I think the biggest thing is the acknowledgement that this is not a pretty thing. This is not a glamorized thing. People who suffer from eating disorders, it is the worst thing that they've ever experienced, most likely. I mean, obviously there's traumas that come along with it, but it is a fight every single day. It's not this pretty picture of, oh, I'm going to exercise, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to look perfect. They never feel like they can look perfect. This is not just about a body image. This is not just about like the outside appearance. It goes so much deeper than that. So just people to realize that this should not be put on a pedestal, that someone that suffers with disordered eating can take this so much differently than someone that just wants to maybe be more healthy, be more fit. But just realizing that it's such a slippery slope, and individuals who suffer with eating disorders, it's just a fight every single day. And it takes a lot of people's lives as well. I mean, this is the number one causing mental health disorders of death. So.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And I think that's a really important message to close out with, really just question whether you are glamorizing something that's really awful for a lot of people out there, and whether you have the kind of information needed to be giving advice about this. I think that's a big one. You know, this is a big space to be really, really cautious in. You can give advice about, you know, what helps your anxiety, but this is something so much deeper, so much more complicated that you really, really should be cautious about what you're putting out there.
Right. Yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And if anyone if anyone has questions about their child maybe going through this or themselves, or I'll put in the show notes how you can reach out to schedule an appointment with Kristen, who specializes in eating disorders.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you again, Kristen.
Yeah, thank you, Kristen.
Yes, thank you guys.
Yeah. And I think this is a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Great.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.